Sutton, who do you think should also step into his place?
All right, well, we can learn a lot more about David Souter right now. He's planning to retire after nearly 19 years on the Supreme Court, giving the president, President Obama, his first chance to fill a vacancy on the High Court. Our friend Nate Persily was at the Supreme Court on Wednesday watching the proceedings. He's a professor of law and political science at Columbia here in New York City and a frequent guest on our show. And Nate, you called it, right? You wrote a dispatch after Wednesday's arguments that Souter looked like he might be leaving the court. Did you see it in his eyes?
Actually, he seemed particularly frustrated by that argument. This was a constitutional challenge to the Voting Rights Act,
right.
A very big case. And you got the sense that he was regretting that this was the parting blow, that this was going to be the case that he was going to have to leave on, and he was going to have to write a dissent in this case. And it sort of was emblematic to him about the rightward shift in the court.
And that was about Article 5 that was being contested in the Voting Rights Act. We talked about that the other day on the Takeaway. So that's still yet to be decided.
Right, but it was pretty clear from the oral argument that the five more conservative justices were going to strike down the Voting Rights Act, which is a very big deal for them to do, and that Justice Souter would probably dissent.
All right, so for people who haven't followed the court very closely, probably haven't heard much about the court, what role did Souter play? He wasn't frequently a swing vote. What was his primary role there?
Well, Justice Souter is the most recent in a long line of Republican appointees who then surprised their appointers by being liberal. And so he frequently joined the three other more liberal justices on the court to form a four-justice dissenting bloc, I guess the way to put it. The most salient issue that came before him in his early years was obviously these abortion cases, where he surprised many by upholding the core aspects of Roe versus Wade. He did join conservatives in saying that the government doesn't need to fund abortions. But for the most part, on issues of civil rights, on issues of equal protection, voting rights, other things, that he was pretty solidly with the liberal box.
And wound up being infuriating to the right on that basis, because some people saw him as a turncoat. Even though Supreme Court justices by definition are supposed to be immunized from this kind of politics, he was seen as a turncoat by many of the right. And some people, at least that I've talked to, believe that was part of what was behind the reaction to appoint such conservatives later, to make sure that it was somebody who was going to stick to the line and not give any surprises, people like Roberts and Alito.
No, I think that's definitely right. And I think that, Souter has become a symbol of what happens when a president doesn't vet a justice sufficiently, and that there's a chance that they could significantly change from what was expected.
All right. Well, most people don't follow the court too terribly closely, but we have a piece of sound here from David Souter that most people will probably recognize, even if they don't follow the court all that closely.
There is no genuinely subjective indication beyond what can be viewed as either a dimple or a hanging chad, and there is a general rule being applied in a given county that an objective intent or an intent on an objective standard will be inferred. And that objective rule varies, we're told, from county to county.
Dimples and hanging chads, Bush v. Gore.
That's right. He was one of the dissenters in Bush versus Gore, and his dissent actually emphasized that the court never should have gotten involved at all in the controversy, that it was something that, threatened the impartiality of the judiciary and was the kind of thing that the political branches should solve.
All right. So Souter is a liberal, what's branded a liberal. Ostensibly, Barack Obama would want to name somebody of like ideological thinking. So we're not likely to see any major ideological shift on the court. Is this block likely to stay the same? Let me ask it this way. What prevents Barack Obama from falling into the same trap that George H.W. Bush did when he appointed Souter and wound up with somebody who voted against his ideology most of the time?
There's always a chance that a justice will evolve over time on the Supreme Court, but I think Barack Obama, a constitutional law professor, is very well acquainted with the nominees that he might be putting forward, and I think that's unlikely.
You got any names for us, potential replacements?
Well, all the names that are being kicked around are the ones that the people are thinking about. Elena Kagan, who's the Solicitor General, former Dean of Harvard Law School. Kathleen Sullivan, former Dean of Stanford Law School. Diane Wood on the Seventh Circuit. Sonia Sotomayor on the Second Circuit are all names that people are pointing to.
Right. A lot of women this time around. I mean, what do some of them bring to the table? Anything jump out at you in particular?
Well, I wouldn't be surprised, for example, if he chooses someone who is not a judge right now. That might be a sort of significant move for him. So that's why the deans of the law schools are possibilities. Some people mentioned Deval Patrick, the governor of Massachusetts, who also was an attorney in the civil rights division, led the civil rights division under President Clinton. Each one of them has a track record of supporting particular, I wouldn't call them liberals, I mean, because there isn't, in the historic sense, there aren't even really true liberals on the court of the nature of Earl Warren or Justice Brennan or Justice Marshall, but they are certainly more to the left than the conservative members there. And, you know, I think that each one of them is a pretty predictable vote to go with the four more liberal justices.
All right. Well, around where I work on Capitol Hill, nobody can seem to look beyond, forget the Beltway, they can't even look beyond the Hill itself, and people throw around the name of Senator Dianne Feinstein, member of the Judiciary Committee from California.
That's a possibility, but I think that I would think that's unlikely. And remember, one of the other questions is how old they are, right? I mean, he wants to appoint someone who's relatively young, so that that life appointment really means something.
All right. So you said that you said a justice can evolve, and certainly Souter evolved. That's a nice way of saying turncoat. Somebody on the right might say,
"Oh, they're entitled to change
sure.
their mind."
Of course,
I mean,
they
really do evolve.
And that's the question I have: why, how, and why? Has there ever been any indication of his evolution, why he changed, or was he hiding his true opinions when he was in confirmation hearings?
It's a little bit of both. I think that he was hiding some of, I don't know about a, sort of actively hiding, but he was a stealth justice. People knew very little about him. It made him confirmable, and that's why George Bush the First wanted him as the nominee.
And how do you think that this is going to play outside of the Beltway? I mean, is this a story that sort of the average American is likely to follow? Do they care? Is it something that sort of that they would be concerned about right now?
Supreme Court battles are less about the individual person, although sometimes with Judge Bork or Judge Justice Thomas they could be, than they are about the salience they bring to the issues that the courts decide, particularly abortion, issues dealing with race, other kinds of civil rights issues. And that's what happens when you have these fights over Supreme Court nominations. It focuses people on those constitutional issues. Gay rights is also another area.
All right. Well, we've been asking listeners about who they think should be next on the court. There's an opening, and our listeners have been weighing in on this. So listen to this.
Hi, my name is Laura. I'm calling from New York. I am just thrilled that Obama is the one that's picking the new Supreme Court justice and not John McCain, which would have changed a lot in America. I trust his choice.
All right, indeed. But not a surprise that Obama's going to get at least one pick, and they expect him probably to get more.
Yeah,
you're flashing three.
I think it's likely that he's going to get three picks. I mean, I think Justice Ginsburg and Justice Stevens are likely to retire in the next 3 years, at least those two.
All right, so what's coming up this summer then, or at some point, if Justice Souter retires in June, as is being widely reported, is a confirmation hearing, a confirmation process in the Senate. Democrats are close to that magical 60 vote number because Arlen Specter, who's former chairman of Judiciary, is switching to the Democratic side. Even if the Democrats do have 60, there has not been a Supreme Court nomination process in many years that hasn't been a big red meat, politically divisive issue. Think of things like the nuclear option, parties going to the mat over this stuff. Is that still likely to happen even if there are 60 votes on Obama's side?
Well, it depends who he nominates. I mean, I think that the likelihood that the Republicans will try to obstruct or try to vote against a nominee depends on the how liberal that person is.
But they also raise a lot of money off of it. Forget about the votes. They can get their base ginned up over it.
Well, that's right. I mean, this is an opportunity to take a stand on all the kinds of moral values issues that have often divided the parties and that are electorally significant.
All right. Nate Persily, he's a Supreme Court watcher and a Supreme Court expert and a professor of law and political science at Columbia University. He's a frequent guest. Thanks for coming in to join us. Appreciate it. Well, we want to know. We're talking about David Souter. It's widely reported that he's stepping down from the court. Of course, we want to know who you think should take his place. It doesn't have to be a lawyer. It doesn't have to be a circuit judge. Someone that you know, someone you respect. 8778-MY-TAKE or mytake at thetakeaway.org. Let us know. We want to hear from you.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.